This podcast is certified fresh.
Freshmediaworks.com.
Welcome to the Mikey Pod on the Bayou Show.
That's not what this show's about.
It ain't.
No. Here, watch this. Welcome to Mikey Pod on the Bayou. Texas, it's not just for cow-tipping rednecks.
Oh, welcome to Mikey Pod on the Bayou. This is episode number 58. This is my third episode in 1 week. What is up with that? I think I've got some free time. The Mac is making my life easier. I hate to say it to you people, and I was one of them too. That's like, whatever, don't give me that Mac stuff. But I like it. Today's show, Bren Dubé, who is the executive director of Koinonia, which is where I'll be spending four months, September, beginning of September to December. I don't know when in December I leave. But she is talking to us about the background of Koinonia, how it started, what I can expect while I'm there, and all that stuff. I'm really excited. Today, I also just realized, is the 12th anniversary of my sobriety. I've been sober for 12 years, people. Could I get a shout out, a represent, something? I don't know. Anyway, all this outdoorsy stuff has me thinking of Jane Sibree and her song, which is so like earthy to me, Bound by the Beauty. So I'm going to play that song and then go right into the interview / conversation with Bren Dubé. Thanks for listening. Okay, I'm here on the phone with Bren Dubé, who is the executive director of Quinonea. Welcome to the show, Bren.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Well, I wanted to just get some sort of history of Quinonea and maybe ask you some questions about what to expect. So just to start with, can you kind of give me sort of a rundown of how Quinonea started and what exactly it is?
Okay, if I get too long-winded, please interrupt me. But
okay.
Clarence Jordan and his wife Florence and Martin and Mabel England, another young couple, in the 1940s wanted to start a community. Clarence was a New Testament Greek scholar and also had a degree in agriculture from University of Georgia, and he wanted to help the poor some way, and also he took seriously how things read in the Acts of the Apostles, and so they started a community, and they bought this old rundown farm in Georgia in 1942, and they moved here and started living and working, and other people became attracted to coming and living in community on the farm. And they were very much involved with helping their neighbors. And most of their neighbors were African-American. And when they, when the people at the farm treated African-Americans equally, sitting down to table with them, inviting them over for festivities and all sorts of things, the local community in Georgia in the 1940s, 1950s didn't take to that really well. And there became a number of incidences. Quinonea was bombed and shot at, and Dorothy Day almost was killed at, the founder of the Catholic Worker Movement was almost killed at Quinonea. So there were many years of persecution of the people who lived here. But they did not return violence with violence, and they survived. And many things have grown out of Quinonea. That probably the most famous is Habitat for Humanity, building houses for people in need all over the world. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. It was very much a part of the civil rights movement, but not in the sense that it was a political organization or anything like that, just basically because they were trying to live the gospel and treat each other equally. It just got them in all sorts of trouble, but they didn't back down in their efforts to treat everybody equally, and they treated even people who persecuted them with love and compassion. So it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's really kind of interesting proof that, you know, in a philosophy of nonviolence really can work.
It does. It does.
So how did you learn about Quinonea?
Oh, gosh. Well, it was a God thing. I came here with a group of students, in fact, from St. Catherine's Montessori School, where both of us, a school we both know well, right, Michael?
Yeah, I don't. Right after I got you to start talking about your history, I realized that I didn't say anything about our history,
right.
And that really you got me the job pretty much at St. Catherine's.
You being around Michael for the last almost 10 years is a part of my life has just been terrific. So. But it was bringing some students here. Actually, we came to work at Habitat for Humanity, and on our last day here, the volunteer coordinator there said, "Well, you need to go by the farm to see where all this started. You know what our roots are." And I have to tell you, inside my mind, I was thinking, "I do not have the time to stop by the farm. We've got to go to Texas."
Right.
But, you know, being the polite Texan, I said, "Yes, ma'am," and we came out here. And what happened to me, and then what I saw happening to the students, we were very moved by what we saw at the farm, what we felt at the farm, the people at the farm were so kind, loving, and in a very sincere sort of way. So it really, it was really a moving experience. And we were only here for 45 minutes. And a few months later, I brought another group of students here. We lived and worked here for 11 days. And during the course of that visit, one of the community members said, "Well, you know, we're looking for a director." And I remember thinking, I have to know somebody that would really be great, because Koinonia deserves someone really great. Who do I know? And I was kind of, you know, going through my head who I knew. And finally I said to this individual, I said, "Well, David, I can't think of anyone right now, but I know I must know someone. And so when I get back to Texas, I'm really going to think about this, and I will let you know. I'll give you the names of a few people." And then I heard him say, "How about you?"
Dun, dun, dun.
And so 1 year after my first visit to Koinonia, I moved from Texas to Georgia to lead the community forward. And completely unexpected, not something that I was planning to do with my life. And but here I am, and you know, we're going forward.
Yeah, that's one of the things that really impresses me about you, is your sort of ability to follow, I don't know if I would call it your spirit or your heart, or just, you seem to be someone who really gets connected with, you know, what you really want to be a part of and what you feel moved to do, and you make it happen.
Well, I've been fortunate that way. I still need to be a little bit better about my writing. But Michael, when you're here at Koinonia, I have high hopes that we'll do a lot of writing together. So.
Yeah. So we, Brent and I collaborated on a one act musical.
Uh-huh.
And we'll be working on that there too. That's part of the draw for me, to have a simplify as much as possible so I can maybe focus more on being creative. So I'm really looking forward to that part of it too. So let's see. So while I'm there, what kind of work can I expect to do? I got a little bit of a rundown from Anne, I believe. Well, she's the hospitality
person. Yeah, Anne Karp. Yeah, Anne's a remarkable person.
She was really easy to talk to also. We talked probably for maybe a good half hour, 45 minutes, just about what to expect, and you know, my history and a little of her history. So I know that there are pecan orchards and is it called see, this is what's going to be interesting. Is it called an orchard where they grow the pecans?
It is a pecan orchard. It sure is. We have work at Koinonia. Well, what we try to live a life, a more balanced life than many of us in the American culture get to live, and that we try to balance between prayer, work, study, and service. And when you come as a community intern, you have an opportunity to participate in all those areas. And the work service comes in two ways. There are the daily chores that we have to do just to be a self-sustaining community. We have to take care of the land, which primarily are the orchards and a blueberry. We have blueberries, and we also have a grape arbor that we take care of. And we have a bakery. And in fact, it was the bakery back in the 50s when we were being boycotted. No one in the county would sell anything to Koinonia, nor would they buy anything from Koinonia. So Clarence started a mail order business, and you know, we had pecans, and Clarence coined the phrase, "We're going to ship the nuts out of Georgia." And we're still doing that, shipping the nuts out of Georgia. Uh-huh. So we have all of those chores that go with just running the farm. But then we have all of the things that we do with and for our neighbors. We have an after-school program. We have a summer program for youth. We have a program with that we do for the elders called Circle of Friends. You know, if someone, you know, dies, we, you know, we'll go and visit and, you know, maybe bring a cake or something like that. We have our biggest ministry, the one that has lasted from 1942 to 2006, because our ministries over time have changed just depending on the needs of the community and who is living at Koinonia. But the one that has not changed is hospitality. We have over, you know, 5,000 people visit us every year, so there's lots of being with them and talking with them. And so there will be no shortage of things for you to do, Michael, that's for sure. What you'll experience in your community internship is that the first week or so is orientation, and you'll get to work in every area of the of Koinonia. And then after you do that, you and I meet, and you choose, we try to match you up with something that you really respond to, you feel really comfortable doing, liked doing, and then that would become your primary work, though we all have to wear many hats at Koinonia, mm-hmm. but you will have an area that you will focus on. I know you'll just love Heart to Heart, because Heart to Heart is our home repair ministry, and Michael, you strike me as the kind of guy that can go around replacing bathtubs and roofs and all that kind of stuff, right?
Right. I'm willing to try anything. That's why I told Dan, because like it's all going to be new for me. So,
yeah, the heart to heart is really going strong right now. That we're spending a lot of time helping maintain people's homes, especially those people who can't. Do it themselves because of economic reasons or physical reasons. And we've been really fortunate that the Fuller Center for Housing has given us a grant to do this. So we have matching funds available. We try to partner with people. We kind of agree with Habitat's slogan, a hand up, not a handout. We want to be neighbors, not a social service agency, but neighbors helping neighbors, because ultimately that's if we can have small neighborhoods all over this country and the people in those neighborhoods helping each other instead of just going into your own home and shutting yourself in and not knowing who your neighbors are, I think we would take a step forward and in a better way to live.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it's just such a... It seems like something that people, or even I in the past, would have shot down. I'm like, whatever. I'm so sure these people are going to, you know, like have a self-sustaining community and like go help other people. But yeah, it's neat.
Yeah. And it's we've been doing it. Our Koinonia has been doing it since 1942. There was a time, I mean, we had hard times in the 50s when we were being, you know, physically attacked, but another time that was really hard in Koinonia's history were the 1990s. And in 93, after 50 years of really living this very, very special way of life in community, it was decided, and this is, you know, another long story that I won't get into for this interview, but it was decided that we would adopt more of a nonprofit corporate model. Instead of the community model. And so, you know, people were put on payroll and we started being like I guess the best way to describe it is a nonprofit corporation, but it really Koinonia really went through a very hard time. Just for a practical reason, I don't think anyone ever did the math to see that Koinonia can't afford to put everyone on salary. We don't have that kind of income here on the farm.
Oh, right.
And so in 2005, we recommitted ourselves to the community model. So we haven't gone back to the common purse, which was part of the original, but we all live on a modest allowance, and we pool our resources as you know as much as possible. And we're going forward now with as a community once more.
Nice. So housing for me I think Anne said that there was a possibility of me staying in a duplex that was there, that was women on one side, men on the other.
Right.
She wasn't certain of that.
Well, what the housing team will do when it gets close to your group of interns to come, we'll look at the housing situation, and we do use the duplex mostly for our community intern program. And what we have at Quinanilla are various houses on campus, and then different people live in those different houses. And the duplex, which I think we're renaming the Con Brown house and the Alma Jackson house. And if you want to know who those people are, well, you'll learn, Michael, because in your one of the classes you will take here includes Quinanilla history. But people that want to go to our website and do a search might, I challenge them to go find out who Alma Jackson is and who Con Brown is. They both have an important part in Quinanilla history. But this is a simply built house built by the community members years ago, and individual bedrooms and a kitchen and a living area. And so the whole idea is for we have several terms each year of interns. You're the fall term, which is September to December. And all of you will go through an orientation together. You will attend study sessions together. You will have community meetings together. It's for you to really experience what it's like with living with a diverse group of people and how you work out the good times and how you work out the bad times, because living with human beings, we all know, is not the easiest thing in the world. So
right. Interesting. I'm really excited about doing this. And also, like, it's one of those life changes that's just, it's big.
It's certainly been, life changing for me and something I didn't expect. But these 2 years I've been here, I've grown in ways that I could never have imagined. But I do warn you that you might grow in ways that you don't really want to. The cooking here is pretty good, Michael.
I thought I was going to lose weight while I was out there doing this manual labor.
Well, you'll have a chance, but you might have to, I don't know if you're running anymore, but you might have to pick that up again. I certainly have had to try to do something, because the food is way too good.
So that was one of my questions too. I know that there's one community meal every day. How do interns usually deal with food for the rest of the day?
We have food from the food bank, which we distribute to our neighbors who need it, and also most people at Quinanilla qualify in terms of our allowances are small, so you certainly will, because on an intern's stipend, I don't know how much stipend you're going to choose, but the maximum number is not going to feed you.
Because the max is $15 a week.
The max is $15 a week, right? So, but you'll be able to get. We have a stock of food there from the food bank, and you'll be able to get food from there. And plus, one of your first assignments as a group is to come up with a grocery list, kind of general things that you'd like to get every week or every couple of weeks. And then there's an additional stipend for additional food allowance for that. So we won't let you starve. And the kitchen is open, and so you can go and get leftovers, and that's real popular with people, is to go get leftovers in the kitchen. And then also we have potluck on Sunday night, so you get to bring a dish for that, and that'll keep you full for a week, I tell you. Jim Dubay cooks breakfast on Saturday morning. So there are a few more than a noon meal, but you won't go hungry, I guarantee you.
All right. That was because I was looking at that this morning, and I went, wait a minute. $15 a week plus one meal a day equals I'm gonna be hungry. But no, it's gonna work out perfectly. So my
we'll be working on our writing together. So you'll have a few meals out at the Dubay, the Dubay House. So.
Nice. And Jim is running. It seems like Ann mentioned that he had in the past. So maybe he can help to motivate me, or we can work on each other.
Yeah, keep you in shape there, Michael.
It's time. I have not been running, just so you know.
Oh boy, I'll get to watch you suffer in the Georgia heat.
I'll make it though. Maybe I'll start training for Koinonia this week.
Good idea.
Yeah. So I also wanted to ask about the spiritual mentor. Ann mentioned that to me. And it's one of the things that surprises me is that although it's a Christian community, there really are like a number of different faiths represented. Am I understanding that correctly?
Right. We have we welcome all people here. We feel that's more in line with the gospel than what sadly we see some groups, even groups, Christian groups, groups that call themselves Christian. Don't always welcome everyone, but we feel like our idea of the gospel is that you're welcoming to everyone here that comes. And so, yes, we do have, you know, we have a lot of people who are searching. At any given time, there may be Muslims, Jews, Christians of all stripes. The whole spiritual mentor idea is an ancient Christian tradition, which I think is really has taken root in recent years in the Protestant movement. It certainly has been part of the Catholic tradition forever. Is you have a spiritual director or a spiritual companion, spiritual mentor, etc. And this is the way we do it. Let me just explain it for how it will be for you. One member of the community, probably from the group of stewards. Stewards are the ones who have been here the longest, usually, and have committed long term to Koinonia. You will be matched up with someone from that group, and you and that individual will meet once a week, maybe for an hour. Just to see how you're doing, and maybe you're going to decide to keep a journal while you're here, or maybe you're going to decide to meditate while you're here, or whatever it is that you decide to do in the way of a spiritual practice. And so you just share your how things are going, and you share that with your spiritual companion. And sometimes you discover things by talking to another human being, even though, you can certainly pray directly and have a dialogue directly with God. But sometimes when you talk to another human being, you kind of figure out things that that maybe you don't if you're just sitting around thinking about it. So it's just a meeting to share once a week. And also, at the same time, you also will have a work mentor. So whenever you finally, after your orientation, choose an area you're going to work in, you will have a person that will walk side by side with you in that experience, too. So someone you can go to about work questions or, when things may not be working smoothly, or things are working very smoothly, or things that you think, ideas that you have, because we learn just as much from the people that come here as they learn from us. In fact, I think maybe we learn more from the people who come because, we get people from all over the world, and just some of the most interesting people, come to Koinonia. And we're building renovating a chapel. We have a very out-of-tune piano that I'm hoping that gets replaced when the chapel is done. So, Michael, I'm looking forward to you filling it full of music.
Yes. Well, all right. Last question. Suddenly it feels like a quiz show. Last question. In the, I can't think of the name of it, the policy about that people have about equal opportunity. You mentioned sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions that people keep asking me is, are they okay with gay people? So, and in the in that statement, you are. But I was wondering, like, how that equates to the real experience there. Has there ever been any sort of issue among community members?
Well, this is it's interesting that you bring this question up today, because we had an experience this week. We have a community intern, and at noon, various times during the day, but at noon we there is a devotion. And Chris had not given a devotion before. This was his first one. And so he got up and gave a devotion. And basically his devotion was coming out of the closet.
Oh.
And he was applauded and welcomed. Again, you know, if, you know, we just believe in, if we're following Jesus, you love people. You love people. So Michael, you will be, you know, very welcomed here. Now the thing that we're going to have to deal with eventually, Koinonia has had a long-standing policy or rule. Those words are too strong. A long-standing tradition is that if a couple weren't married, they don't live together, you know, on the campus.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're viewing that because culture has definitely changed since the 1940s and 50s. So we're taking a look at that. But you know, there would be if a gay couple came to live at Koinonia, there would be an uprising, not because there was a gay couple, but it would be because, well, you let them live together, but then you won't let a heterosexual couple live together.
That would be interesting.
You're right. Now, you know, that hasn't happened yet, but I figured that it will eventually. But it's one of those questions that we're going to have to deal with, and that's something that's beautiful about Koinonia is that as issues come up, we really discuss it and think about it and reflect on it and, you know, pray about it and meditate about it, etc., and really try to follow the Spirit. So no, I have not seen, you know, now I will say this, we have visitors from all over the world. Now most of our visitors, given Koinonia's history, are very progressive, you know. But sometimes some of our fundamentalist friends come, and they're welcome too. I mean,
right.
And so you might have a visitor that would definitely have a reaction that would be strongly would be negative.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen that since I've been here, my 2 years, but that's, you know, I know that that's a possibility, that, you know, if a lesbian or gay announced themselves and then there was a visitor here who was of, you know, of a more fundamentalist bent, that could be problematic. But if that sort of thing happens, we will deal with it.
Yeah,
and, because everybody's welcome, and we truly are called to love all people. There is, I think, a write-up or an interview on our website right now. We had a lesbian couple come through and give a talk one evening, give a class, and they were just fantastic, and they're driving around the country. It's called Gay into Straight America. And they're visiting with different churches and religious groups because they just feel like followers of Jesus, and if people would get to know them, other followers of Jesus in particular would get to know them, they would become, you know, come to see them as people and not, you know, not something horrible, which unfortunately some of our Christian brethren believe, but yeah. Koinonia does not.
I read about them this morning, actually, that couple, and I wrote them an email asking them to come on my show. I just thought that really, really interesting what they did, because it, I think I'm remembering correctly that they, excuse me, they, their neighbors started discovering that they were gay, and they just invited everyone to dinner with a, like a handwritten invitation and a flower. Am I remembering that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what, it's just a really, yeah, I'm looking forward to just this sort of different environment, because we don't get a lot of that out in the rest of the world, I guess.
Yeah.
People are trying to just, you know, find ways to connect with each other, even though they're different.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, well, thanks for taking the time to come on the show today, and I'm sure we'll all hear more from Bryn Dubé as I embark on my journey to Koinonia.
Can't wait, Michael.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, too. I'm really excited.
See you soon.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thanks, Michael.
And this concludes the interview with Bryn Dubé. Thanks, Bryn, for being on the show, and I hope this answered some questions for you. I got a couple of emails of people asking, like, what are you doing? I didn't explain it very well. So that should pretty much sum it up. I leave Houston at the end of August and move in Koinonia around the 9th of September. That's it. Email me, mikeypod@gmail.com. You can voicemail at 206-339-6682. Visit the website at www.mikeypod.com. I'm just remembering, I'm going to use my outro thing, so all this information will be said again. But I would love to hear from you. I'd love to hear your take on what you think of all this. So with that, I will say goodbye. Until the next time, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Mikey Pod on the Bayou with Michael Herron. Mikey wants your input to the show. Do you have a comment about something that was said on the show? A review or a promotion of a cultural event, especially in the Houston area? Or you just want to say hi? Email is mikeypod@gmail.com. The Mikey Pod Show hotline, 206-339-6682. And record it down for all to hear. See you next time right here for Mikey Pod on the Bayou. MikeyPod.com.